Senate will come to order. Roll call by the chief clerk.
Roll call for Thursday, February 26th. Anderson, Bebout, Burns, Case, Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Honeycutt, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Schiffer, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Basie, Von Flatern, President Hines, 30 present.
Prayer by the Reverend Furchin.
We give you thanks, Heavenly Father, for this new day of life in which we serve you by serving this state. As you have placed the members of this Senate in positions of responsibility, provide them with exactly what they need in each hour of this day. We commit this day to you and look expectantly for your interventions and inspiration. You are the source of our vision, our hope, and our perseverance. Bless these leaders and all who work with them. Give them the gift of a productive day. We commend these petitions to you, Almighty God, trusting in your mercy. Amen.
Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading corrections of the approval of the journal. Would the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 25th, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day is Sean Ansari, MD from the UW Family Medicine. Nurse of the day is Penny Eichel, VA Medical Center at Sheridan. Thought for the day, if you carry your childhood with you, you'll never become older. Okay, concurrences. Senator Burns, are you ready on message 406?
Senator Burns, I'm talking to you.
Senator Burns, are you ready on message 406?
Yes, Mr. President, I am, as soon as I find it.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 25th, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 406, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 13, Shed Antler Collection. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 40, noes 19, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on message 406, Senate file 13, Shed Antler Collection, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, when the... When this bill came through both our committee and through the Senate here, there was a good amount of concern expressed over extending too much authority to Game and Fish over the idea of people who collect antlers, and some people actually do it for a living. As you recall, one of the reasons that Game and Fish asked for this is that our neighboring states to the west had actually closed their antler collection times, so we were actually getting flooded with collectors in the southwest part of the state, and that's where Game and Fish said they really needed the authority to regulate this. This is actually an amendment that was addressed. The same concern was expressed over on the House side, and this is amendment that was put on by the House TRW committee, which restricts the authority to restrict antler hunting to west of the Continental Divide and only between the dates of January 1st and May 1st of each year. I think it's a good amendment. I think it addresses the concerns that were expressed over on this side, too, and I would ask the body to vote aye.
Senator Vasey.
Just a question. So in Senate District 11, which the Continental Divide runs right through, that on the west side you could push those animals through that bridge or pass about a mile and then you're okay? Is that...
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, we were thinking of asking for appropriation for a busing service.
With immunity.
The concern actually is down in the further southwest part of the state with the mule deer.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 13, message 406, and that you vote aye. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson, Bebout, Burns, Case, Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Honeycutt, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer, Nicholas,
excused.
Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Schiffer, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Vasey, Bonflatern, President Hines.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 22 ayes, 7 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 13. Senator Von Flaterin, are you ready on message 409?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 25th, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 409, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate File 57, Rental Vehicles. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Von Flaterin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 409. Senate File 57, Rental Vehicles, and I ask the Senate do concur and vote aye. Very minor change. Everybody loves to see a concurrence request like this. All they did was go on page 3, line 21, where it discusses about the rental vehicle agency certificate, including certificate number, will be printed for each location with the physical address of that location indicated and shall be displayed within the place of business for that location. And they added the word conspicuously displayed. So all they did was insert the word conspicuously. So I ask for an aye vote from the Senate.
The motion that the Senate do concur on Senate File 57, message 409, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case, Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Honeycutt, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer, Nicholas excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions. Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 57. Message 408. Senator Geis, are you ready?
Which one that on?
Senate File 37, Anna Freed.
Yes, I'm ready.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 408. Concurrence requested, Mr. President, Senate File 37, antifreeze and petroleum products. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, I move concurrence request on message number 408. It pertains to Senate File 37, antifreeze petroleum, and I would ask the body to vote aye. What they did there is, as we kind of missed it, but you go back on page 10, we had $230,000 in there. And then you go on page 10, line 11, and when you added up the two figures, one was $160,600, and the other one was... $25,000. Why, when you add those two together, it only comes to $205,000. So what they did is just took the extra $20,000 out. So I would ask you to vote aye on message 408.
The motion that the Senate do concur on Senate File 37, message 408, and that you vote aye. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas excused. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson. Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 37. Joint Conference Committee reports. Message 340. Senator Geis, are you ready on message 340?
Yes, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
Joint Conference Committee report, Senate File 32, Wyoming Livestock Health and Emergency Disease Program. Reference House message number 340. Signing for the House, Representative Semlick, Chairman, Representative Philp. Signing for the Senate, Senator Geis, Chairman, Senators Bebout and Vasey.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, I move Conference Committee Report 340 and would ask the body to vote aye. What we did there is we took out the amendment that said that this would go into the standard budget. So next year when this comes before the Appropriation Committee, it'll have to be in the expanded budget so they get another look at it. And I'd ask you to adopt the Conference Committee Report on message 340 and ask you to vote aye.
The motion is the Senate do adopt the Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on Senate File 32, Message 340, and that you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, recall the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report on Message 340, reference to Senate File 32. Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 191, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 25th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 146, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 25th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 294, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 25th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 69, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Townsend, no, Senator Peterson, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 25th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 239, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Meyer, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senators Massey and Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. House Bill 114, second reading of the House Bill.
Community Colleges Amendments.
Okay, there are amendments. Reading clerk, read in amendment number 1.
House Bill 114, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 16, line 19.
Senator Nicholas.
Question. Mr. President, I move second reading number 1 to House Bill 114. This is the issue about the use of the word recalibrated Seems to me that's a dangerous, loaded term, and we can get the same thing that we're trying to achieve by using the word reallocated. I'd urge your support.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I support the amendment. It goes into the part of House Bill 114 that talks about the fixed and variable costs. Recalibrated is maybe a loaded word, and I think reallocated is probably a better word. I support the amendment.
If your question, the question is in second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 114. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. Second reading amendment number 2. Reading clerk, read in the amendment.
House Bill number 114, second reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy, page 21, line 24.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this goes into the area where the community colleges have to approve the strategic plan, and it's previously it's a majority. I seek to move it to a two-thirds. I had a little discussion about that yesterday as whether it should be.
Senator DeCara.
Mr. President, could we have just a moment? They're just passing that amendment out, so could we get the amendment so that we can see what we're talking about?
Point of order. All right. Let's see. The amendment is being distributed, I believe, at this time. We'll hold up just a minute till you have a chance to get the amendment and read it. Should be distributed now, Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, do you want me to remove that, or where do you want me to go in the process?
Yeah, just start over again,
you
please.
Got you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 114, ask for the reading be dispensed with, and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this goes into the subsection 5 on the bottom of page 21. Line 24, it's in the area of the draft plan. Currently, a majority of the designees of each of the seven community college boards have to approve that plan before it moves forward. This seeks to say that we'd rather have a two-thirds majority. That gives us more of a consensus. This strategic plan is a very, very important, integral step of what's going to go on in community colleges probably now for the next 10, 15 years. That's about how long these things usually run in a cycle. We usually come back in and see what we've done and relook at them for a few years down the road. And so this is really going to set the future of what community colleges are going to look like. So, Mr. President, I'd like to see that we have more of a consensus on that, what that future is going to be, rather than just a majority. I think in the long run, it'll make the sailing quite a little bit smoother, and everybody's interests will be looked after, I think, in a more appropriate and in a more uniform manner. And with that, Mr. President, I'd ask the body for a favorable consideration.
Senator DeCaria.
President, I guess like to ask a question, because when you do two-thirds of seven, you know, you come up with 4.7. So are you envisioning four? Or are you envisioning five? I mean, wouldn't it have been simpler just to put the number in as far as how many we thought should have been in there instead of two-thirds? It doesn't really make it very clean.
Senator Coe.
It's a rising on and against the amendment. This was the last amendment that we approved in the task force planning process in House Bill 114 in November, December, where we do allow the Senate presidents through their Board of Trustees to come in and vote on a majority basis to approve the strategic plan. I don't know why you change this to two-thirds. I think majority is the way to do this amendment. It was a controversial amendment at the start, probably still is a little bit controversial in some people's minds. But to have a bigger consensus when you have seven community colleges out there in seven separate counties serving all 23 counties, I think it makes sense to turn this amendment down. I think a majority is the way to go, and I'd urge that you defeat the amendment.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I applaud the committee chairman on bringing at least four to the table to get the community college input. I'm supporting this amendment, and the only reason is I can see a situation where potentially you could have big versus smaller. And that's the only reason that I support this, because we have you could argue, four larger community colleges and three smaller ones. And I don't think the college has ever intended to run over the larger ones, yet this just brings a voice, and I think clearly it means that there will be five instead of four. And it just gives a little bit of more input from those. We're talking about a strategic plan for the entire state. We're talking about, we always want information. We always want them to participate. Why not let them have that one more vote? You know, it'd be nice to have a majority, total, unanimous. That'll never happen. I understand that one college could hold the rest hostage. But at least if you have five in it, you're giving those smaller colleges a voice. And I would appreciate your support.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. It sounds like the Constitutional Convention. It was a great argument back then as well. The consequences of doing this, what happens if the plan gets shot down at this stage? What that means is that there will be no budget submission eventually to the legislature for the following year. It shuts off the strategic plan. It ends the process. The only provision in the bill says that the Community College Commission shall recommend as much state funding the next biennium as the colleges receive for this biennium to the governor. The governor, of course, can recommend whatever he wants to. The legislature can do whatever it wants to. The capital construction and the maintenance issues do not get resolved, and we're at the gridlock that we're at right now. So it is good to have the community colleges buying into the process. By passing this amendment, it just means that there is one more out there that will have to approve it, and therefore it's more likely that they will disapprove it and end the process at that point, and we'll be right where we are right now.
Question. Further discussion before the author of the amendment have his second time? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, going back to the good senator from Evanston in regards to why not just five, Mr. President, because I believe that at some point in time, we may have more or less than seven community colleges, so that's why you don't put a fixed number in. So, Mr. President, in response to the good senator from Laramie, I believe that it's in the best interest of the community colleges to move forward with this. I don't think there's anyone that will go out there and hold hostage the whole process. Because they know that this has been a process. It's had a lot of effort put into it over the last 2 years, a lot of good effort from a lot of good people, a lot of consensus building in the process. And I think that really the consensus building is what we have to look at when you get to the final phase in the implementation, and that's what this seeks to do. So I ask for your favorable consideration.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 114 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment have failed. House Bill 114 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 125, second reading of the House Bill.
Establishment of Highways.
House Bill 125, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 262, second reading of the House Bill.
Very rare and uncommon areas.
There are amendments. Would the reading clerk read in amendment number one?
House Bill 262, second reading amendment number one to corrected copy, page one, line four.
Senator Larson.
excuse me. Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 262 and ask that the body vote aye. What Amendment 262 does is to go in and remove, to try to make it a compromise amendment where both sides will be happy. In committee, and again yesterday on the floor, we heard the testimony that you're letting a group of seven unelected officials make the only determination on the very rare and uncommon areas and doesn't really provide much of an appeal process. What this amendment does is goes in on page four and takes the legislator out of it. I may add it takes the Minerals Committee out of it. So it could be looked at as a self-defense amendment. But as you will see, after that, it goes over to page 3, line 7, takes Joint Minerals Committee out of it, and inserts the paragraph you see here, the State Loan and Investment Board, which is who they have to provide the report to, that the State Loan and Investment Board, no later than 30 days after the hearing, the State Loan and Investment Board shall consider the Council's report and shall approve or disapprove the Council's recommendation on the designation of a very rare or uncommon area. The approval or disapproval by the State Loan and Investment Board shall be considered a final agency action and may be appealed pursuant to the Wyoming Procedures Act. I think this is important because it then sets up an almost immediate appeals process if someone desires to do that. And then it goes on and deletes the other on page four and the dates and the rules. Now, I'm going to tell you, I think this amendment has a flaw in it that can be corrected on third reading, and that is in drafting the amendment, the whole thing was tied in with such language that the recording portion was eliminated as part of this amendment. I think that's easy to fix, and I think we can do that on third reading. But in committee, we heard both sides of the argument. We heard that it's seven individuals, not elected, who are making this decision. I would submit to you the State Loan and Investment Board are all elected officials, the Big Five, as we talk about. Some people have asked, why didn't you say the State Land Board? It's the same people, but acting in a different capacity, which I think is important. And I had some notices from the Office of State Lands and Administration. One of them says that they want to let me know that in some instances of rare and uncommon designation, the office and the board has taken a position. My answer to that was, I think you're there to provide information. I think you're there to do all of that, but I don't think you should be taking a position. It isn't the State Land Board that's doing it. It's the State Loan and Investment Board. Same people, but acting in a different capacity. They are elected officials, so I believe that eliminates the argument that it's going to be done by seven people who were just appointed. And so I think it takes the legislature, and particularly the Minerals Committee, out of the process of holding the hearings and going through all of that process, preparing legislation, trying to get it through this body, and going through all of that procedure. I don't think the legislature should be doing that. My very good friend from rural Natrona County has admonished us on occasion after occasion. If we keep adding these kind of things into the legislature, we're not going to have any time left. And folks, I can see a real catastrophe if we keep doing this kind of thing, because pretty soon we won't have any time left to add on any more agricultural exemptions. And that could be really critical. But in all seriousness, I do think that we have to come back with a third reading amendment requiring them to be recorded, because in crafting this, it was hard to separate the ones out, and frankly, I didn't get it done. But I think this meets everybody's concern. If the final decision will be made by elected officials, in fact, the big five elected officials in the state, it does not take the action and the whole process away from the EQC. It puts the Office of State Lands and so on in where they are recommending and providing information without taking a position. So I think it makes it a better bill, gets the legislature out of it, and provides a process that is almost immediately appealable if you don't like it.
Time.
And so I would hope that you would support the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question being, second reading amendment number one to House Bill 262. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment passed. Reading clerk, read in amendment number two.
House Bill number 262, second reading amendment number two to engross copy, page 4, line 5.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in light of this the previous amendment passing, it creates a conflict with this, so I would like to withdraw it.
Without objection, amendment number two will be withdrawn. Right now, if I turn off Bebout's, Hines mic comes on. Doing wrong. House Bill 262, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 279, second reading of a House bill.
Statements of consideration review.
House Bill 279, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Yes, Mr. President, we do. Third reading consent list for today is as follows. House Bill 33, Expanded Opportunity Pilot Program. House Bill 39, Population Determinations, Use of Federal Census. House Bill 47, Commercial Signage on Highways. House Bill 97, Weights and Measures. House Bill 134, Natural Resource Large Project Funding. House Bill 173, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance. House Bill 215, Tax Exemption for Renewable Resources. House Bill 255, School Districts Kindergarten Programs. House Bill 281, Telemedicine State System. And finally, House Joint Resolution 8, Equine Resources.
The consent list is House Bill 33, Expanded Opportunity Pilot Program. House Bill 39, Population Determination Use of Federal Census. House Bill 47, Commercial Signage on Highways. House Bill 97, Weights and Measures. House Bill 134, Natural Resource Large Project Funding. House Bill 173, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance. House Bill 215, Tax Exemptions for Renewable Resources. House Bill 255, School Districts Kindergarten Programs. House Bill 281, Telemedicine State System. And House Joint Resolution 8, Equine Resources. Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the list? Senator Jennings.
House Bill 33, please.
House Bill 33. The consent list, then, is House Bill 39, Population Determinations, Use of Federal Census, House Bill 47, Commercial Signage on Highways, House Bill 97, Weights and Measures, House Bill 134, Natural Resource Large Project Funding, House Bill 173, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program, House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance. House Bill 215, Tax Exemptions for Renewable Resources. House Bill 255, School District Kindergarten Programs. House Bill 281, Telemedicine State System. House Joint Resolution 8, Equine Resources. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass? House Bill 39, House Bill 47, House Bill 97, House Bill 134, House Bill 173, House Bill 183, House Bill 215, House Bill 255, House Bill 281, and House Joint Resolution 8. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe. Cooper,
aye.
DeCaria,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie, Von Flatern, President Hines.
Aye.
30 ayes. House Bill 39, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes. House Bill 47, are there any changes?
Case, aye to no.
Burns, aye to no. Massey, aye to no. Martin, aye to no. Ross, conflict. DeCaria, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Larson, I to know. Perkins, I to know. Hastert, I to know. Schiffer, I to know.
Hines, I to know.
President Hines, I to know. Anderson, I to know. Johnson, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 47, 14 ayes, 15 noes, 1 conflict. House Bill 97, are there any changes?
Meyer,
I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 97, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 134, are there any changes? Geis, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 134, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 173, are there any changes?
Jennings, I to know.
Perkins, I to know. Case, I to know. Bebout, I to know. Townsend, I to know. Landon, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 173, 24 ayes, 6 noes. House Bill 183, are there any changes? Case, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 183, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 215, are there any changes? Jennings, I to conflict. Geis, I to know. Coe, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 215, 27 ayes, 2 noes, 1 conflict. House Bill 255, are there any changes? Case, I to know. Perkins, I to know. Peterson, I to know. Jennings, I to know. Dockstader, I to know. Johnson, I to know. Cooper, I to know. Landon, I to know. Bebout, I to know.
Hines, I to know.
President Hines, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 255, 20 ayes, 10 noes. House Bill 281, are there any changes? Case, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 281, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Joint Resolution 8, are there any changes? Co, I to know. Larson, I to know. Perkins, I to know. Burns, I to know. DeCaria, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Joint Resolution 8, 25 ayes, 5 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 39, House Bill 97, House Bill 134, House Bill 173, House Bill 183, House Bill 215, House Bill 255, House Bill 281, and House Joint Resolution 8 have passed the Senate. House Bill 47, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 47 have failed to pass the Senate. Senator Burns.
I call for immediate reconsideration on House Bill 47. I ask the body to vote no.
Did you vote on the prevailing side?
Having voted on the prevailing side.
Motion is for immediate consideration of House Bill 47. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions? Townsend?
No.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 11 ayes, 19 noes.
The reconsideration motion have failed. House Bill 33, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 33, sponsored by Representative Hammonds, Expanded Opportunity Pilot Program, and an act relating to public education, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask for this to be removed from the consent list. Just to think about one more time what we're doing. This is the first time that we've ever taken money out of the school foundation account and given it to some other entity other than K-12. First time. And we've diverted flows before it got in the account. But it's the first time we've ever, that I can find out, talking to LSO and talking around, nobody can tell me when we've ever taken money directly out of the foundation account and given it to somebody other than K-12. Additionally, I want you to think about the testimony when the bill was presented. We had the term at risk, but nobody could explain to us what that at risk really was. It means something to one person over here, something else over here. And oh, by the way, when we do come up with an at risk definition, then we're going to let all the other kids go too, which I think is a good thing. But are we going to be able to come up with an at risk definition so that we can get a special class through? The other thing was the innovation of all this. And we couldn't get a description or backup of what innovative meant, too. So I think what we have here, ladies and gentlemen, is probably a good idea because some of the colleges, like the one in Laramie County, are already doing this. I know the college from my town has programs that is already doing this. So even though it's not a lot of money, I think that we ought to step back, take a look at what we're doing. But the most important thing is we're taking money out of the foundation account and we're giving it to somebody else other than K-12. And it doesn't make any difference if that money eventually helps those kids. It's that money is going to somebody else to manage it. And I think for that we ought to vote no on this, and I'd hope you join me.
Senator Massey.
President, I agree completely with the previous speaker in the fact that this program is going to help kids. Absolutely. And that's the most important thing. Not the mechanics. A few months ago, when we were preparing an amendment on where we would need to take the money to help out some of the higher education, Excellence in Higher Education Foundation account because of lower earnings, they immediately raised a red flag and said, no, you need to divert it before it goes into the school foundation account. They're well aware. They're very well aware of the legal issues regarding the school foundation account and the use of the money. And they had absolutely no concerns, no recommendations with regard to taking the money here and giving it to the community colleges to use for K through 12 kids, for high school kids. You know, this isn't the province. That account is not the province of the Wyoming Department of Education. It's the province of the kids. And as the previous speaker mentioned, this program is going to help kids. And if you look at who we're helping, it's the kids who are at risk or have dropped out of high school. And to remind folks about the statistics we talked about in the first reading, that means they're more than likely going to be needing public assistance for the rest of their lives. They're going to get jobs that are not sustaining. They're going to be struggling for the rest of their lives unless we can find a way of getting them a high school diploma and then moving them further on. The programs that the programs that are going to be offered by this bill are lined out in some detail on page 3. And the types of innovative programs that will be offered and in how they're going to be offered. So the program, the bill is quite detailed in that regard. So, again, I asked the body to support this modest amount of money in order to get at a population that's very important. It may be the last opportunity they have in their lifetimes to be able to acquire the knowledge, the skills, and the abilities to be self-sustaining. And by the way, Mr. President, as far as I know, this is the only bill, the only line item, the only amount of money that we're providing this session that's going to go to this population.
Anyone else wish to speak for Senator Jennings before?
Mr. President, let me clarify something. I didn't say it was going to do the kids. Guys, it was probably a good idea, the concept, but I think there's a lot of flaws in it. And again, I went to the sponsor and asked about the funding, and I even brought up some constitutional concerns that I had with it. And it doesn't make any difference whether all our lawyers don't have a problem with it. What we're doing here today, if we pass this bill, we are making a policy change that says, from this point on, let's open the gate to the foundation account to put it other places as long as we say it's for the kids and it's eventually going to get there. That's not what we've done with it in the past. I don't think that's the gate we should open. And if this is such a good idea, then let's bring it back and let's work on it, because the sponsor was not willing to work on changing the funding route. Sponsor wanted it to stay. I backed off, and this is where we should take care of it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Massey.
And very quickly, Mr. President, again, the account belongs to the kids, not to the bureaucrats.
Are you ready for the question? House Bill 33, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Landon.
No.
Larson.
No.
Martin.
No.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
No.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
No.
Basie.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
House Bill 33, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 33 have failed to pass the Senate. House Bill 236, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 236, sponsored by Representative Harshman, School Finance Instructional Facilitator Program, and Act relating to school finance, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 236, third reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 20.
Senator DiCaria.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 236. And, Mr. President, I would ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. Mr. President, after talking to the prime sponsor of this piece of legislation, we went back in and reworked completely the subparagraph Romanet 4 to make it clear what is it we're trying to do. Mr. President, again, this is when school districts apply for the funding for the instructional facilitators, these are what would be on the list as far as the minimum requirements as far as receiving funding. Mr. Chairman, what this amendment would do, it would just completely change that paragraph so that it reads, a system by which school administrators prioritize use of instructional facilitators based upon student achievement gains measured over time. Mr. Chairman, I think it clarifies a lot of what this legislation was trying to do. What the sponsor was trying to accomplish was that when they apply, those instructional facilitators go to classrooms that have the highest need and supposedly will do the most good. And so, Mr. President, I would ask for the body's favorable consideration on amendment number 1 and stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Cole.
I support the amendment. I think it's a good amendment. It brings the bill back into a workable form. Ask the body to support the amendment.
The question is the third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 236. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. House Bill 236 having been read 3 separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DiCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geist.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
No.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing.
Johnson, aye
to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
House Bill 236, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 236 have passed the Senate. House Bill 240, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 240, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, Elected State Official Benefits, an act relating to elected state officials, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill number 240. 40, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy. Delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 240. Mr. President, I brought this amendment on because I wanted to have a little more discussion on the floor about this bill and specifically about the amendment that we passed. As it stands right now, it's only a $500 increase to the five elected officials, which actually is more of an insult than anything. And we were, and I believe that the amendment was offered as something of a bargaining chip in conference committee with the other House. And I got some concerns about that philosophy. This body is considered the more senior of the two bodies and has always actually taken pride in putting out a product, a final product, that we can be proud of and we think should stand up on its own and are ready to defend that. And I'm not familiar with and I'm not comfortable with the idea of putting out a bill that's set in a position to be a bargaining chip in conference committee. And, Mr. President, also, I've got, in addition to that, I've got absolutely no problem with the salary increases on the engrossed bill. When you look at the size of the state government and you look at the responsibilities of the five elected officials and compare it to what the salaries and amounts of money people are making in the private sector, I think even at the new salary levels on House Bill 240, I think we're still getting a bargain. And it's not a question of whether people will run for these offices or not. It's a matter of if they are getting the compensation equal to the job that they're doing, or actually equal to the job that we, the people of Wyoming, are asking them to do. And I still think they're relatively cheap.
Senator Von Platerin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I thank the good senator from Sheridan for bringing this. It's a bad philosophy. It's a bad way to do bills is to just throw a couple bucks on there so you know it'll have to go to conference. So it's not a great idea, and I hope we vote for this amendment. I can also mention the price, the salaries that are on the engrossed bill. Unless you want people from just this local area to be your governor and your secretary of state, nobody else can really afford it. It's quite a sacrifice to keep a residence a couple hundred miles away and run for governor and still want to go back there on the weekends or whenever you can. That's quite an added expense and inconvenience. We're not paying them, even at this salary, we're not paying them an exorbitant amount by any means. So let's vote for this amendment and try to agree with, and hopefully the other body agrees with us and we get this done right now.
Ready for the question? Question is third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 240. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Those in favor, please stand. Those opposed. Motion have passed. Senator Case.
Since that involves a financial expenditure, wouldn't that require a roll call?
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, it doesn't either increase or decrease the budget or expenditures this biennium. I think a strict construction of the rules is it does not.
Next vote will be the one that increases. House Bill 240. Are you ready? Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to speak against the bill now. The information that the Appropriations Committee received from NCSL with regard to the average salary levels of the five elected officials listed in this bill are really greatly out of whack now. The all five of them are now well above what the average is around the country for salaries. And especially the folks listed in 2, 3, and 4 little I are well higher than they should be. And in thinking about what's going to be happening in this state, after we leave here, the budget cuts that folks are going to go through, the likelihood that some people are going to lose their jobs, others are going to lose benefits, it's awful difficult to justify giving five elected officials a 46% salary increase, and especially when that salary increase goes well above the national average. I would urge you to defeat the bill.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, rising on and against the bill, since we got down here, we've heard about all the new fiscal profiles for the state. What's projected to be revenues out there with natural gas, oil, everything like that. We've become very fiscally conservative. Our friends down the other end of the building down there, they're doing everything they can to take money out of everything. This does not send the right message if you go home to your constituents and say, you know, we cut back because we didn't have the money, but we raised the five elected officials' salary significantly. Sends the wrong message. Urge you to defeat the bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, rising on for the bill. Mr. President, frankly, I'm not as concerned about the averages in these positions from other states. I guess I could say one thing, that I think our officials are above average, too, and deserve the compensation they get. It seems to me that when you look at the jobs, when you compare them, they're way below what a comparable private sector job would be, way below. You look at the responsibilities. Take your state treasurer. State treasurer is managing how many billions of dollars? Yeah, it's somewhere in the vicinity of 10, I believe. That's a tremendous responsibility. In the private sector, you pay a lot more than this to manage that kind of money because of the quality of people you need to attract. The state superintendent. We're going into an era where we've got education very well funded. The key is going to be accountability and developing the systems, and they are working very hard on developing the systems that will give us the data for accountability. That's a key function going forward. What we're paying is very small compared to what you'd pay somebody in the private sector with comparable responsibilities. I think it's reasonable, and I would urge just to adopt the bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill, folks, these jobs are public service jobs. Like it or not, they are. This, at this stands now, is just too much, too fast.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I would ask you to please support this bill. I'm looking, first of all, it's not going to start till after the next election, just like our salary. But I'm also looking as if we have financial problems and they're still going then, what kind of people do we want on the big five boards that are wrestling with it and with those responsibilities? I would ask that you support this so that we can get people running for these offices who are competent and capable and will be getting a salary because, as somebody said earlier, they're probably of the age that they have children in college. And if they want to go back home after they've served their time period, they have a second house they have to take care of. So I think that... this is a good bill, and I would like to attract the type of candidates that I hope this will bring.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, 46% increase, just like that. I'm not going to go back home if I can avoid it and tell my constituents that I voted for that.
Senator Larson. Well, Mr. Chairman, if we were sending out applications to hire people, maybe we should do this, but we all know we're not. People don't run for these offices because of the salary, either because it's too low or it's too high. They run for the offices because, number one, I think they want to serve the public. Number two, they like the, whatever you call the perks or notoriety or power or anything else. If this were private sector jobs, the salary would be the main consideration that they would probably be looking at. In a public service job, it is not the main consideration. It's probably the last consideration. And I don't think you're going to get a different class of people running just because you increase the salary a little bit. What you are going to get is a bigger expenditure. And having to tell the people, yeah, we cut all these programs, but yeah, we did raise the salary of all those people who decided to run for office. I can assure you there will be no shortage of candidates in the next election. But salary is not the motivation, and I ask you to defeat the bill.
House Bill 240, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt? Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
No.
Von Flatron?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 5 ayes, 25 noes.
House Bill 240, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 240 have failed to pass the Senate. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, consideration of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senator Jennings.
Committee of the Whole, come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 54. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 54, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Workers' Compensation Amendments, an act relating to work to Wyoming Workers' Compensation Act. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 54 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 54, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 7, line 19.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing committee amendment does two things. One, it goes in on page 7, line 20, in the area where we're supporting children of workers that get killed on the job, and broadens the educational possibilities. You can see that. Second, it goes in on page 10 in the area where we're putting in a cost of living increase for people on permanent total disability, and does two things. First, it clarifies that the existing people that are on already are going to be able to get this cost of living increase starting with this coming year. And second, it simplifies it administratively so that rather than having to do it on the anniversary date of each award, you do it once for everybody for the whole year. And the department testified that would be a lot simpler to administer. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 54, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has passed. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this bill was one of the two, three major bills of the Joint Interim Project for the Labor Committee. We held a public hearing with a lot of testimony during the summer. We considered the bill at our second meeting, again at our third, received a lot of scrutiny. We heard quite a bit, and this bill is responsive to a number of the things we heard. Let me just give you a little information as we get started. The health of the workers' comp fund. The workers' comp fund, as of December 31st, 08, so about 2 months ago, had a balance in it of $977 million on a mark-to-market basis. You all know what's happened to investments. The most recent actuarial determination of the need for reserves was that on an undiscounted basis, you need $931 million in reserves. So there was some surplus at that point. It would take an actuarial study, Mr. Chairman, to determine exactly what it was at this point. But the basic point is that we're very close to being in balance. I would speculate that since the actuarial study was done June 30, 2007, the as-of date on that, that because of the economic activity in the state, that the need for reserves has risen somewhat. And we can also anticipate if we have a bust, we'll probably have some more expenditures out of the fund than were anticipated. That's been the history in previous busts. So I think you have to look at this as we're close to being in balance. Mr. Chairman, with that, there were a number of specific issues. I'd like to start out by yielding to Senator Hastert to explain the first part of the bill.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First part of the bill, we get into page 2, which it begins to bring in the existing language on employee, into page 3 on lines 5 through 7, where we talk about sole proprietor, where there typically hadn't been included in the past. We just added language there that there is a mechanism for sole proprietors to be covered. Mr. Chairman, then on to page 4, on lines 4 through 7, there is language there saying that if you're successful or if you're injured on the job as a, and it was the result of a, of another individual or another party, that if you choose to file suit against a third party, that the law states now that the workers' comp gets a percentage of that claim. All we're saying in this section is that if you're required to return one-third, one-fifth, one-tenth, whatever the percentage is of your award to the division, that the division has to share in that portion of the cost, simply as that. So if you're awarded, if the division is awarded one-third of your award, they pay one-third of the cost. They just share in the cost of it, as simple as that, Mr. Chairman. Then we get on to the next section, 2714108, extra hazardous. This is where we talk about how a sole proprietor can be covered in that section, Mr. Chairman, that it states that a partnership or sole proprietor employing two or more employees can be covered or not. And then bringing in on page 5, the employer, and then bringing in the language in that he covers the employees through that. And then that on page 5, lines 12 through 17, that if they elect to terminate coverage, and these are, if you're in an industry of extra hazardous defined by law, then you're required to be a part of the comp system. But the comp system also allows for voluntary enrollment into the system. If you voluntarily enroll, you're required to be in the system for 2 years. This language allows you to, once your two-year period is up, you can terminate the following month instead of waiting for the next section or next quarter, Mr. Chairman. Then we get into the late rate classifications and surcharge on page 5 through 6, and this talks to the fact that and defines clear how the division may offer a premium credit. And a premium credit is something along the lines of, like, if you have an insurance policy and you've paid in $1,000 and the division or the insurance company says at the end of the year you've had any claims or anything, it says, hey, you did really well, so we're going to apply $200 to your next year's premiums. So they're just able to apply that. And then the next definition on in 3i goes on to talk about how that is more evenly and fairly dispersed. That you simply that it, individuals that have to, companies that are current with their premiums, must be current with their premiums and paying their premiums on time to be eligible for the premium credits, Mr. Chairman. That is the first part, and I will now yield to Representative Landon to explain the next section.
We're going to raise you to Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to our good friend from Sweetwater County. Mr. Chairman, I hope this isn't out of order, but can I deviate for just one moment? I've got some very special people that I'd like for you folks to recognize. Can we be allowed to break into the bill for a moment?
Privilege of the floor? Yeah.
Thank you very much. First of all, there's somebody who worked with us on this particular piece of legislation, and he's sitting up here in the balcony. I'd like to recognize Representative Eichel. I noticed him sitting right up here. Welcome back, Representative. It's good to see you. And, Mr. Chairman, we have what might possibly be the best group of elementary students we've had down here thus far. We've got some visitors here from Alcova. K through 6 is with us, Powder River Elementary. Their teacher is Joan Fenster. They're all right up here, and if you could help me welcome them to the Senate today.
Welcome to the Senate, and I think you noticed one of them was helping us vote earlier. Thanks for the help, guys.
There you go. Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me to step aside there for a moment.
and begging my indulgence on that.
All right, back on the bill.
Back on the bill. Let's go to page 7 real quickly, and I'll try to run through this relatively quickly. It's a lot to get your arms around. The interim committee spent a great deal of time on this, so we'd be happy to try to answer questions as we go through. 2714403, our statutes, that's on page 7. Our statutes call for a periodic cost of living adjustment as it stands now. That amount right there on line 11 stands at about $180 per month, up from the last time this statute was rewritten in 2001. There is an impact of raising that compensation figure up to $250 per month. I'm going to provide you, our good chairman provided you with an overall look at that workers' compensation fund. I thought it might be useful so that you could track each one of these adjustments does have its impact. So I'm going to provide that for you. You can write it off in the margin if you'd like, but it does give you an idea of what this kind of action does do. Again, we believe the fund is actuarially sound and we can do this. That's going to cost us about $176,000 a year to do that. The impact of raising the age from 18 to 21 years old, which comes up a little bit later in that paragraph, $672,000 a year. There is some impact to the Medicaid program as amended on 17 and 18. Lines 17 and 18, about $59,000 a year. I wanted to paint a financial face on this so that you understand why we spent so much time dealing with these issues during the interim. We have proposed raising the age limit for a child enrolled in college and would pay benefits until that child reaches 25 years of age. That's up from 21 years of age. There are just simply not very many students who can complete a college education by the age of 21. The committee does call for a COLA on page 8. If you move over to page 8, the total cost then underneath this entire section would be about $974,000 a year. That COLA, by the way, 3% or the Consumer Price Index, whichever is the least. On page 8, you will see that we add a provision for calculating awards for temporary total disability at either 30% of the statewide average, that's the change, or the two-thirds, whichever is greater. That impact on the fund is about $248,000. The amendment comes in on page 10 a little bit later, but on 9 and 10, let's move to page 9. We make some adjustments for our death benefit. I think that everybody on the interim committee felt like we needed to go in and pay attention to this particular area. We again allow for an alternative way of computing the benefit. On page 10, we insert another COLA for permanent total disability. We increase the months of payment from 54 months up to 100 months for a surviving spouse. The department estimates a cost of about $1.5 million per year for this particular adjustment. On page 11, we get to Romanet 5, which goes in and makes adjustments for parents of an employee who was a partial or sole provider. Again, we increase the months of benefits from 30 up to 60. On page 12 and 13, we make some provisions for our citizens who live in the outlying regions of our state. At issue here was health care. If forced to an out-of-state medical service or if their company has an agreement with an out-of-state provider, the worker would still receive full disability payments. We know that a lot of our citizens live in outlying regions and seek health care at population centers outside the state. At the top of page 14, this provision would allow the worker to continue receiving benefits until some other benefits kick in. We had testimony during the interim that sometimes our workers get caught in the bureaucracy and end up having to wait several months before some benefits kick in for them. That can present some very undue hardship on the families. That's a quick run through of about 6 or 7 pages. We can answer questions afterwards, but I'd like to yield the floor back to our good chairman for the rest of the bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the remainder of the bill, we've got the vocational section, page 1415. We expanded the number of years that people can take to complete that by one. We were told there wasn't a significant fiscal impact from that. On the recovery of benefits paid by mistake, we had some testimony during the interim that this had been a problem, that the division had made some mistakes and then come back considerable time after the fact and tried to collect from people, and it was a major problem. Provision on page 15 applies to the injured workers. We put a 12-month statute of limitations on that. The House committee on page 16 did the same thing for the medical providers. We don't think those are significant dollar items, but it sure was an item of complaint that if they're going to try to recover a mistake, they ought to find it and do it quickly. So we did that. On the contested cases, there's a minor provision at the bottom of page 17 where if the injured worker doesn't meet some deadline through an attorney's fault, the hearing officer can order things returned to the division for redetermination. Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of at least one case where that was a problem, and the problem was the attorney died and therefore was unable to meet the deadline. You had an injustice done to a worker, and this gives opportunity to be sensible. And then the final thing, Mr. Chairman, which we'll deal with when we get the committee to amendment, is the appropriation. We had a problem, and it's frankly one, Mr. Chairman, that we were unable to deal with successfully entirely. And that is that you can have a contested case arise when either when a claim is made and either the employer or the division says, wait a minute, this was not a work-related issue. And those go to a hearing process. The hearing process takes a while in the nature of these things. And we had quite a bit of testimony from people who said, look, we're unable to work, lost a house, some cases lost a spouse, had just a financial catastrophe because they went for 6 months, 12 months longer without a resolution on their case. And the resolutions, Mr. Chairman, are balanced. Significant percentage of the time, the injured worker wins one of those. Significant percentage of the time, the injured worker loses one of those, and it was determined the injury was not work-related, which is what you would expect if the system was running properly. You'd have a mixture of those kind of cases, and you do. We were unable to come up with a way of dealing with the problem that the worker who ultimately is found to be entitled gets really hurt by the length of time that the determination takes. Because all the things we could think of would have perverse incentives of inducing unfounded claims to get benefits for a period that you'd have trouble recovering. The one thing we did find is that although the primary cause of the delays is the attorneys, generally the private attorneys representing the injured worker, not being ready because they had trouble getting information and they had trouble scheduling things, we found that the state was contributing because our Office of Administrative Hearings is just plain overloaded. So our solution was, okay, they're overloaded, they can't have can't get things done on time. That is a factor in the delay. We just add a couple more people, and that'll take care of it. I think committee number two has come up with a somewhat more creative solution to that, which we'll deal with in just a minute. Mr. Chairman, in conclusion on the presentation of the bill, that's one area where, frankly, we had difficulty dealing with it. We got a real problem out there, and we haven't been creative enough to find a fully satisfactory solution to it. There was another area that we considered that we didn't do anything with, and that is we've had a number of cases where there have been, and they've been in the public press quite a bit, workers complaining about their treatment by the Workers' Compensation Division. We find, Mr. Chairman, those fall into two categories, especially the ones that have been publicized and the ones that came before us. A number of them are cases where there was a disease or an illness that followed an injury, and the Workers' Compensation Division made a ruling and frequently has been sustained now through the hearing process that that disease was not work-related. But the injured worker feels it was. I know in at least one case it was a cancer. In another case it was a thing called fibromyalgia, where it's an illness that can occur that medical science doesn't fully understand. And the division made the judgment that a number of those were not compensable because they weren't work-related. And those people were not entitled to benefits. That didn't satisfy them, and some of them have been very vocal about that. But frankly, I think the division, by and large, decided those correctly. And that's about half the cases that you've heard about in the public press, people who are simply not entitled, even though they think they are. The other half of that problem, though, is that you do get people in there who try to game the system, who get to be the age that I am or a little younger, decide it's time to retire and that workers' comp's a good way to do it, and try to get in when they're not really entitled to. And the workers' comp turns them down, and in the process, Mr. Chairman, they get fairly jaded. The claims people who deal with that get pretty jaded and pretty cynical, having to deal with these people that are trying to game the system. And you have a very natural human reaction that says that everybody's trying to, and they do give a bunch of people that have legitimate claims a hard time. No two ways about it, that happens. That is a management problem. It's a chronic management problem just because of the nature of the human dynamics involved. We've brought it to the attention of the management there, both in the confirmation hearing last year, some of the interim processes. I think it's been reduced to, and it's better than it was, but that, I think, will always be a bit of a problem in workers' comp, just because of the dynamics that I just described. So we don't have a perfect answer on that. Let me go into one other thing. There is a provision in there, Senator Hastert explained it, for rebates. There's also a provision where in your annual rate setting, you can increase or decrease rates for premiums. And a number of people have asked me, okay, with this bill and the status of the fund, will there be a rate cut or a premium credit for employers next year? We asked that explicitly of the workers' comp people in the hearing up in Committee 10, and the answer, and I think it's the honest answer, is we aren't sure. And the reason for that is you've got several different dynamics going on. The actuary is going to have to make a computation, probably do it this summer, that will govern next year's rate setting. You'll have to look at the amount of reserves you've got and the market conditions right now. We are having some losses in the investments. They're about equally that we have a small amount in equities. They've had some losses. We've had some losses in the fixed income portfolio because of the changes in interest rates. It's clear that we're not going to have for the next few years the earnings that we would normally have on the investments. And I think anybody that has their own 401k or IRA or other personal account will understand the dynamics of what's happening there. The returns, and even in a portfolio largely invested in fixed income, the returns are just not what they were. That will enter into it. Second, this bill will have an effect. My guess is the overall effect is going to be slightly under $10 million, but it'll have an effect. You'll have to calculate that. Third, we have had a big run-up in the boom. Looks like we're going to have an economic decline now. The experience in the last economic decline was there are less opportunities around. People tend to stay on workers' comp longer when they've got an injury, longer temporary total, more permanent total. You'll get some more expenses. So the actuary will have to plug all that through, and the result is that we simply were close enough in balance, we simply aren't sure whether the direction of the rates for the employers next year will be up or down. It's in the balance. So I would urge you to evaluate the increases that this provides in the benefits, and there are, and we've talked about them, on the basis are those justified in terms of what people are should be reasonably entitled to. Mr. Chairman, with that, there was an amendment from committee number 2. I ask it be read in at this time.
Would the clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 54, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to engross copy, page 1, line 13.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 54. Folks, the Office of Administrative Hearings is paid for by assessments to the principal two agencies for which it provides services. Now, they provide hearing officer services, but they're almost as you call them internal assessment fees. So they charge out about 55% of their work to the workers' compensation, about 45% to the highway fund for driver's license hearings. When we received the sheet, we actually looked to see, okay, what is causing their caseload increase. Workers' compensation is almost stable, in fact, going down a little bit. But partly because the laws that we kick out here, if you look at the driver's license hearings, it's skyrocketing a shot like this. And one of the consequences of all of the laws that we passed, tightening down the enforcement and the consequences of having a DUI, those hearings are rapidly increasing. So what workers – now, the second aspect of that is a hearing that a workers' compensation hearing might be 2 or 3 days, where the hearings for driver's license revocation might be 2 or 3 hours. But there's a larger volume of driver's license increasing. So anyway, the assessment that the Senate Appropriations Committee made was that you cannot attribute the increased caseload to simply one agency over the other. And then anecdotally, as attorneys, we hear that the hearing officers are just really not up to date with a lot of technology. If you wanted to file your documents electronically, you want to exchange electronically, they're not going to have that capacity. So they're inefficient. And it's time to drive them to the next level to get efficiencies in there. This is not the first time that the Office of Hearing Examiners has asked for staffing. They've been asking for staffing every time we look at their caseloads. Frankly, we weren't convinced. Having said that, we said, okay, maybe it's time to give them one position, but we allocate the dollars for that between the workers' compensation at 55% and 45% to the highway fund for the driver's license. And that's an appropriate allocation, we believe, as a function of the caseload. Now, part of the problem is we're not getting reports from them with respect to how they're placing their time. They ought to have a time management system. The courts do it. They give us a time management system, and we could see where their loads are. We do that so we can track what percentage of time is going to juvenile matters, what's time to criminal matters, things like that. It's time to get these folks into the next generation. So subsection 3 is a new provision providing $50,000 of funding to go out and investigate the acquisition of a case management system that will allow electronic filings, exchanges of information, and also would include a case manager or a time management system so that we could get information so we can know where these times are spent. But knowing that they don't have the expertise, we want to make sure that they consult with the chief investment or information officer, our CIO. But so we gave them one less position than they requested, but gave them money to go out and investigate getting to more modern software programs so they can get on the same plane that a lot of your other lawyers are at. What I would mention, too, with respect to when we hear that their caseload is a year and the blame is on the claimant's attorneys, that's to be expected. The attorneys that are hired by the Department of Employment to represent essentially the workers' comp fund, those folks do this full-time by and large. This is about all they do, and they're geared up, ready to go. When an employee goes out to hire a private attorney's got 15, 20, 30 other cases, maybe 100 other cases. So a lawyer goes out, and if you've got four or five settings every month for the following year, you can't afford to drop your entire caseload for one employee. So the employee comes in, you put it in your normal schedule. A year is about right. And the only way for an employee to get quicker attention than that is to go to a lawyer that's either got nothing going on and they're ready to rock and roll, which is pretty rare, or you pay that lawyer enough for him to drop his the balance of his caseload, which you can't afford. And the way lawyers make a living is to manage cases, and it takes about a year. So I don't think you can blame a year caseload on anybody's fault. It's just the way that law office economics works. And so I'm not offended by a year, and I'm not even sure if they need the other position because a year caseload, frankly, is about right. But they asked for two positions. We compromised with one and then said, let's get them electronically built up. Question, I would ask for your support.
Questions on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, rising in support of Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. We were told that if they could have the extra two positions, that they could shorten the average time to get one of these resolved. They thought the total time from a year to 8 months, and they could reduce the time for the setting the initial hearing from 5 months out to 3 months out. Mr. Chairman, a year may not make much difference to an attorney, but it makes an awful lot of difference to somebody who's dependent on that salary and living from paycheck to paycheck the way many people in our society do and has lost their livelihood because of an injury. So it is, I think, super important. I think the amendment that is Committee 2 has come up with is a creative way of using both the personnel increase and measures to improve the efficiency of the office to solve the problem. So I think we ought to adopt it. But if we continue to have great delays in here, we may have to look in the future to some other remedies. I would say we did ask the Appropriations Committee in the normal biennial budget process to take a look at the allocation here between workers' comp and highway and the other users of OAH, because you've got a constitutional problem if it turns out that the workers' comp fund is subsidizing other activities.
Additional questions or comments on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion on standing commitment amendment number 2 on House Bill 54, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That amendment has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to explore a little bit the last sentence on page 17. This is the through the fault of the dead attorney provision. And I'm curious with respect to how that outcome worked, but generally speaking, it's my understanding, my belief in a general sense, that the only jurisdictional date that you can't mess really with that, and we even provide exceptions to that, is the date that the employee files their claim. That's jurisdictional. If you don't file your claim in time, you may find yourselves, unless you've come within a special exception. And the notion there is if you have a work-related injury, you ought to report it. You ought to report it that day to your employer. And if you go on more than about 15 to 30 days, I forget the exact days, then and you may have a jurisdictional delay. After you address the jurisdictional issue, everything else is procedural but not jurisdictional. So, for example, if you miss a date and you simply go back to the Office of Administrative Hearings and you ask for relief, and generally the rule is if there's a reasonable or good cause for the relief, you're granted the relief. And so I would believe that in the sense of the death, that the person, there's a death, the new lawyer comes on board, goes out back and asks for relief, and generally it should be given as long as there's good cause shown. And the good cause shown might be the death of attorney. It might be the attorney screwed up. And we have provisions for that all throughout the judicial code to make sure that regular folks are not penalized by incompetence, foresight, and you know, lawyers do. They have a lot large dockets, and sometimes you make mistakes, so we do that. If what you're doing here, though, is you're saying because on that jurisdictional issue that there ought to be relief. So, for example, you go into the lawyer the day after and you say, file my claim with my employer, which is really employee responsibility, that we're going to give relief to that. That seems to me that you're inviting a lot of opportunity for mischief and what you see it on the criminal appeals, for example, where it is routine that after, you know, we give great defenses to criminals in a death case, routinely the defense is, I did not have adequate assistance of counsel. And you do that in order to get over mistakes that really weren't mistakes or may not, but just as another vehicle, if you will, to get reconsideration of what I would really call substantive things that happened. And if all this provision does is go back and give folks now the opportunity to say, I did not like the outcome, and the only way to get relief is to declare that my lawyer did not do a good job, then you're engaging and inviting a whole series of hearings on that issue. And it's an issue that I think the problem is probably already addressed simply by the procedural things in the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act, which would always give and provide for relief from orders based upon good cause.
Senator Scott?
Chairman, this drags me way back to the middle of the summer when we heard what the problem was. Frankly, we heard from several injured workers, and I'm having difficulty separating what we heard in the hearings from what I heard in private conversations with some of them, but that there'd been a problem. And as I say, the one example I heard was where the attorney had died, where procedural deadlines had been missed, and the division said, no, you're out, you're done. And this may really be, it may be a redundant instruction. I don't think it had to do, by and large, with the initial report of injury. I've always been worried that that was a risk that we were running, that we ought to put some leeway in. But that was not the source of this. This may well be a redundant with the Administrative Procedure Act, but redundant instruction, but useful instruction. for the division to be sensible in these cases.
Additional questions on the bill? Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, having been involved in workers' comp for over 31 years as an employer and having suffered through the late 80s and early 90s when we were broke, to see that we are now solvent is really reassuring, and I think this bill is timely. I think the things we're trying to do with this bill really makes a lot of sense. I have two questions, Mr. Chairman, and it's on page 4, and it's lines essentially 15 through 23, 24, and it talks about the sole proprietor. And I've had several phone calls over the last couple of years from people that are involved in different businesses that have a sole proprietor where there's one, and they have an LLC where, you know, they're the only person that's employed. They do it for liability reasons. And the question is, you know, why two or more? And I just like to see if there's any discussion on that. The other thing is on the employee's experience rating. If the committee heard any discussion about, as I understand that rating system, there are different numbers in terms of workers' comp premiums paid based on the size of your company. And those have not been adjusted for a long period of time. And what's happened, as salaries have gone up, smaller companies, you might have a farm or a ranch that has three or four employees, say, and you've raised their wages, but you're moved up into another category because of the fact that you've raised their wages, yet that affects your experience rating. And I wonder if there's any discussion about that, because that's something that should move as the economy moves, and those upper limits or lower limits should move just to help out the small employees and small employers. And I wonder if any discussion happened in that arena.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on the change on page 4, this is something the discussion in the joint interim led to the provision that was over on the previous page, allowing sole proprietors to elect. And then on page 4, you see and that change was made to correct a thing called the Mark Jenkins Supreme Court case. We have a long history of troubles with Supreme Court cases in this country, and they had knocked out 117 people who had had coverage. The House came in and added this two-employee provision, which will cause the division, if this passes, to send termination notices to 206 employers who will no longer be eligible for coverage because of this. The testimony we had in Committee 10 upstairs was that this would sacrifice $80,000 in premium. And the testimony further was that these sole proprietors tend to be cheaper to cover than other people in their businesses because they're interested in getting back to work and getting on with the business. And they don't make any more claims than they absolutely have to get healthy and get back to work. So they're a relatively profitable group to have. But that's the effect of the change. Frankly, I have some reservations about it. But that would be a subject you might have to deal with in a second reading amendment if you don't want to do this. The theoretical argument is that because your employer is part of your protection against abuse, that they'll protest. Where it's a sole proprietor, you don't have that. But the experience is, no, they want to get back to work. They want to get back to their business. And that outweighs the temptation to rip the system off, I guess, to put it bluntly. So that is a potential problem. I would mention while we're at it on page 4, the testimony we had with the change of attorney's fees that on the third-party recovery, that 40% contingency fee is now typical, with typically as much as 10% in the expert witness and other costs that get assessed against the award. So if the division takes a third, and then the attorneys take, and those other costs take a half, you wind up with about 12.5% for the injured party, and it isn't very profitable to bring suits. Put this in, it will be significantly more profitable to bring suits, and you'll see more of them. The question on the experience rating, we did not hear very much about that at the joint interim. We had employers well represented through the usual suspects from the lobby and from some employers coming in directly. And I won't represent to you that everybody is perfectly happy with the system, but it does seem to be working pretty well. And people seem to think they're being fairly treated. There are protections in for the employers with smaller numbers because if you do a strict experience rating and you have one bad automobile accident and somebody gets very seriously injured or even gets killed, you can blow your experience rating right through the ceiling. And if you tried to assess all that back to a small employer, you'd break them. You'd lose all the insurance aspect protection to this. So there is some limitation on how much comes back to the small employer and how much gets socialized into the general premium so that this really is an insurance program. I won't represent to you that it's perfect. We didn't hear that there was any aspect of it that was suffering from inflation having set in. And since we put this rating in place, which was done in the reforms that started in 1993 and was completed in 1996, I'll check that again, but I think there's some built-in protections there. But we frankly didn't hear much testimony on that.
Just some questions on the bill. Well, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a couple questions over on page 7. This is where we're doing some of the disability or death payments to children. We talked about the increases there. I was just wondering what your discussion was in committee about changing this from 18 to 21 years of age. In particular, when you look about the and then you added the provision for unless they're qualified for receiving benefits under the Medicaid home and community language. Ultimately, it would seem to me that, I mean, generally you see what happens is when a child reaches 18, they typically are qualified for Medicaid waivers and other types of things if they meet the other requirements of that. So my question to you is, one, is this going to create some cost shifting between the workers' compensation fund and the Medicaid program? That's question one. And then I guess the other question I had, too, is your discussion and what discussion you had and the impetus behind raising the age from 21 to 25 years of age if a child is going to continue in school. And just wondered about what your testimony was about that.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll attempt to answer both those questions, which are well stated, and we did have quite a bit of discussion, Senator, about those two issues. The 18 to 21 shift, we frankly, because of that qualification for Medicaid, did not believe that that would do any shifting. Quite plain and simply, we just felt like in the case of a death or a permanent total disability that those children of that worker probably deserve to be compensated a little bit longer, allowing them to get up to an age where they can take care of themselves. When you get down to the 21 to 25, a lot of discussion took place on that particular issue, and frankly revolved around the idea of attending college, being able to complete a college degree, the expense of college, the average time that it takes nowadays for a student to complete a baccalaureate degree is 6.2 years. So frankly, that's the square we landed on. And again, to land the same place as our other senator from Natrona County, that's something that can certainly be talked about, certainly looked at in second reading, but that's kind of where we landed.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, further, my notes show that the less qualified and receiving benefits under the home and community-based waiver program, Medicaid, that results in a savings to the workers' comp fund and I suppose an increase for Medicaid at $59,000 a year. So there is a little shifting back and forth. Now, when you do shift to Medicaid, there is a 50% federal share. It's frankly not a big deal, but the way most of the kids who are really physically or mentally incapacitated are dealt with is through these Medicaid waivers, and that's what we're saying is we're going to get them treated just the way they would be if the injured worker had not died.
Any additional questions on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises, it does so in a favorable consideration of House Bill 54, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 54 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 213. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 213, sponsored by Representative Yagi. Rangeland Monitoring, an act relating to conservation districts. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Johnson, and Vasey. No, Senator Jennings, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Meyer, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senators Massey and Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that House Bill 213 do pass. And I'll yield the floor to Senator Vasey to explain the bill and the amendments.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. Chairman, I ask the body for their favorable consideration on House Bill 213. House Bill 213 talks about rangeland monitoring. As many of you might remember, several years ago, we passed a bill that came out of the legislature for critical stream data. And what that entailed was that that there were point sources of pollution. Nobody quite knew where they were. The federal agency that took care of that had streams in wrong drainages. So we asked the conservation districts to go and monitor this. And of course, the federal agency that was responsible wrung their hands and said, "Oh no, we can't do this." And then the next year, the head of the Department of Ag at that time went to Denver and got an award for doing it, and now that is a kind of a model law for other states to look at how the quality of our streams and the data. This now comes on this much the same. It talks about rangeland monitoring, and what's happening is that on your desk a week ago you got a trade newspaper. And by its very title, you can say, well, there might be a bias, and maybe so. But the headlines on that paper talked about a group that was going to challenge these resource management programs that the BLM has done. Now, these resource managements, I think the one in Carbon County, I could be wrong, but it's taken the better part of 10 years to do that. No sooner do they get them in place than there's a group says, we're going to go to court, we've got our judge lined up, and there'll be no grazing. What this bill is about is the fact that when, as a lessee on these federal lands, whether it's either Bureau of Land Management or the Forest Service, you're a lessee, you're working hard, you're taking care of what you do, and somebody decides that they're going to come in and throw a little wrench in the works, they can get data, because they're well-funded, they can get data, credible or not. And when you come to the appeals process, here's the guy that had the person that had the lease. He has nothing much, and the other group have several notebooks full of data, right or wrong. So what this bill asks to do is that fact that we will allow the conservation districts the authority to go out and start looking at the range, the condition of the range. They can work with these federal agencies. And I might add, I have information here that because of all the activity that goes on in Wyoming, a lot of these BLM offices and Forest Service offices are way behind their work. I believe particularly Carbon County has about 140 permits. The office there, because of having to finish this RMP, is probably now about 30% behind. So these conservation districts then could help them out. They could start doing some of this work on the ground. And on page 2 of the bill, it outlines what the authority is, the funding is. There's an amendment I'll get to in just a minute in that. But when more than one district whose boundaries include land within the jurisdiction of the Wyoming Bureau of Land Management Field Office requests such authorization, the commission can designate a lead district to carry out such duties that might affect other districts. And some of these leases are in different districts, different agencies. What this would allow them to do, exercise the district's cooperative agency authority granted by federal law and cooperation with one or more Bureau of Land Management Field Office or National Forest Services. They can conduct rangeland monitoring within the Bureau of Management and the Forest Service grazing allotments. Monitoring shall be conducted in cooperation with grazing permit holders and lessees and federal agency personnel. So there's actually about three involved. If the lessee doesn't want that, he certainly doesn't have to have it. Participate in development of livestock grazing operation plans, permit renewals, transfers, and resource plans to assure that such plans and permits are based upon and supported by credible monitoring. And this brings the credible monitoring. Conservation districts, in my opinion, have done a remarkable job. They'll report the good as well as the bad, and that's what they do, and they're very good at that. They'll procure office space for range professionals employed or contracted by the district in the most important Bureau of Land Management Field Office, National Forest Service Office. I questioned that, and they pretty much resolved the answer that this would be the best place in many instances these offices would like to have this person in, so that this could be the liaison. They'd know, they could talk to each other and know. D, the commission may adopt rules and regulations to implement the provisions of subsection B of this section. The money then would be housed in the Department of Ag, and the Department of Ag would look at these plans, and if they're plans and there need to be done, then the Department of Ag would allow this money then to be spent on the ground. There are amendments, and I would ask the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to be read in at this time.
House Bill Number 213, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 4, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 213 and ask to dispense with the reading. What this does, and there's some funding here. There's a better amendment coming later as the funding portion, but what I would ask you to keep for sure would be that this there's a sense of urgency here that would allow this to start, if this bill passes, to start upon the completion of all acts necessary and get this started right away. So I'd ask for your approval of Standing Committee Amendment number one and answer questions.
Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Vasey's motion on Standing Committee Amendment number one on House Bill 213, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
And if the reading clerk would read in then the Standing Committee number two to House Bill 213.
Hang on just a second. That amendment number one passed.
Oh, I knew it. Oh, no.
House Bill number 213, Standing Committee Amendment number two to engross copy, page four, line one.
Return it to
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move Standing Committee Amendment number two to House Bill 213, and this reduces the puts the appropriation back at $500,000 for the first one and $400,000 for the second request. And with that, I think actually it was previously explained, and I'd ask for your support.
Questions on the amendment? Senator?
Mr. Chairman, this is certainly a good amendment, and I would ask the body to support.
All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number two on House Bill 213, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That amendment has passed also. Senator Vasey.
Yes, sir. Is a committee of the whole amendment, committee of whole amendment number one to 213. I'd ask the reading clerk to read that in at this time.
House Bill 213, committee of the whole amendment number one to engross copy, page one, line three.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment number one to House Bill 213. What this does, and after looking at this a little bit, there's always this discussion of who these conservation districts really are. They arm the state. Are the supplementing county government. What this does, and it's only fair that the county commissioners would be consulted before this practice would go on, so I would hope you could support this amendment.
Questions on the amendment? All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number one on House Bill 213, please say aye. Opposed, nay. That amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Any questions on the bill? Senator Esquivel.
Hate to interrupt this discussion, Mr. Chairman. I'd like privilege of the floor before we vote on this bill. If that's okay, or I can wait.
Well, I think we can get a Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just to add to the explanation, at least my perception of what the bill is providing here, based upon testimony that we received in the Appropriations Committee, is the primary motivation behind hiring additional people with the conservation districts is because the BLM and the Forest Service don't have enough money and enough personnel to process grazing permits quickly enough. And they also don't have enough personnel to gather the data to stave off or to fight sufficiently appeals coming from outside groups when these grazing permits come up for renewal with regard to the condition of the rangeland in these grazing areas. So essentially what we're being asked to do here is to start a new program within the conservation districts. They don't do this now. And when they do go out to these rangelands, they're documenting the conditions of the rangelands. There's nothing yet here in their work with regard to improving the conditions of the rangeland. As a matter of fact, as you can see in the bill here, they're going to be given office spaces in the BLM and Forest Service office. So the question to ask, is this the time to expand the program? Is this an appropriate use of our conservation districts to go out primarily to gather data to expedite the process of grazing permits? And are we wealthy enough right now to step out and start covering the deficiencies of the federal government because they don't have enough money to put enough people out on the ground to do this?
Senator Vasey.
Mr. Chairman, I believe on page three of the, and I don't know if this was the question from the good senator, but on page three of line 10, it says, They will also participate in the development of livestock grazing operation plans, permit renewals, and transfers. I think those grazing plans certainly have to follow a big part. And I also believe that because of other instances, these conservation districts have some authority to do this anyways.
Additional questions on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Geist's motion that on the Committee of the Whole rights as it does so with approval on House Bill 213, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Bill passed. Senator Esquivel. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm always a little bit uncomfortable in asking for privilege of the floor because I hate to interrupt the process, but this is certainly worth that interruption. We have with us today, today is Wyoming Educational Access Day, and all of you should have gotten these little goodies on your desks. That was provided by students and staff of the Wyoming Trio and Gear Up programs, and they're here with us today, Mr. Chairman, and they come to bring awareness of educational access issues. TRIO and Gear Up are federally funded projects that provide assistance and support to first-generation college students, students with limited income, students traditionally underrepresented in higher education, and students with disabilities to aspire to, gain admission to, and succeed in higher education. Each year, the 12 Wyoming TRIO programs and 2 Wyoming Gear Up programs located at the following colleges, CWC, LCC, NWC, and UW, with offices across the state, serve over 4,700 students. Students here today represent the following projects from Casper, Cheyenne, and Laramie. Student Support Services, Upward Bound, Math Science Initiative, McNair, Scholarship, Educational Opportunity, and Gear Up. As stated previously, these students and staff provided you the goodie bags, and there are statistics, a lot of information in there. Some of the statistics, I'll just provide one, is that in Fremont County, the community college Upward Bound program, students up there, graduated from high school at a rate of 95% compared to overall county graduation rates averaging 75%. Members of the Senate, would you join me in welcoming the students and staff from the various program educational access programs?
Welcome to the Senate. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 180. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 180, sponsored by Representative Miller, Public Transit Account Funding, an act relating to public transit funding. It was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Esquivel, Landon, Von Fladern, excuse, Senator Geis, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. The reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Meyer, Peterson, Townsend, no, Senators Massey and Nicholas, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Fladern?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 180, Public Transit Account Funding. And to explain this bill for us is Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the Chairman of our Transportation Committee. I would ask for your favorable support on House Bill 180, a good little House bill that I think will directly affect a lot of folks across our state. If you take a look in your bin, I've had some information passed out that should give you a pretty good rundown of what we're talking about and what group of folks this bill will affect. 55 local transit and social service agencies in all 23 of our counties. What this bill does, ladies and gentlemen, is to provide a much-needed transfusion of revenue, which this group has not come back to this group for here in the Senate for quite some time.
the way that the Y-Trans system works, it's funding that's routed through our Department of Transportation. 3.3 million of their funding per year comes out of the federal coffers. About 1.5 million comes out of our state coffers. And then there's about a $3.3 million match by these local governments and local agencies. As I said, this is a bill that came about because of the impact over the past 12 to 18 months. These agencies were provided with a budget, but the cost of fuel, et cetera, has really driven their coffers down, and they're badly in need of some help from us. The state monies to this program have remained relatively stable for the past 10 to 12 years, this is the first time they've come back to the Senate in about 6 or 8 years. To walk you quickly through the bill, you'll notice at the bottom of page one what that appropriation is and what it is to be used for. On page two, there are some stipulations. This is a grant program, so these 55 agencies do submit a grant proposal, and through rules and regulations promulgated by the Department of Transportation, that's how these funds are doled out. Paragraph C, you'll notice that is a one-time appropriation. It's my understanding that this budget process will change a little bit. Perhaps the chairman of appropriations is much better suited to talk about that. But pretty straightforward piece of legislation. It's something that I think will help the most vulnerable of our populations. I went home a couple of weeks ago just to provide a quick anecdote, and pulled up to the local grocery outlet there, and our bus system pulled up, and these two little gals jumped out of there. They didn't jump out. They got out of the bus. They had their little recyclable bags and just chattering away, and I thought, you know, they had to be probably 80 years old. And I thought, isn't it wonderful that we have a system that can get these ladies around? We've worked very hard, I know, in this chamber to provide, for independence and to try to keep people at home. These systems out across our state, that's how our people are getting around. That's how our most vulnerable get to where they need to go. I know a lot of the students at the college up in our district utilize the service that is provided. I think it's a very, very valuable system, and hope you'll support the bill. Thank you.
Questions on the bill? Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd urge some caution here. The folks, when we ask for a detailed budget with respect to where the money's, what's currently being spent, where these dollars are going, we never get the information back. And if you look at it, it looks like simply that the $1.5 million just replaces the local match, so there's no local skin in the game. And it seems to me that when you begin to ask for these additional dollars, we ought to be able to see exactly what's the total amount of your budgets, what's the total amount where the state's paying for or the Fed's paying for, what's the request, where the dollars will go. And we simply don't get that from these groups. Finally, with respect to what the landscape looks like, there's about $7 to $8 million of federal stimulus dollars coming to these groups for buses. And in the budgets they already have, they have substantial capital acquisition budgets for busing. And it looks to me like they can, with the new stimulus dollars, they just move their capital request over the stimulus, freeing up more of their dollars for operating. And I'd urge that you'd say, let's slow this thing down. Let's put this bill off, get through the federal stimulus, come back, and get some proper budgets to look at and see what is the appropriate amount for state support, what ought to be local, and what is federal. But believe me, I spent 2 days looking at spreadsheets that you can't understand, and my only conclusion is that this started out, by the way, as a $5 million request, then my conclusion is about $1.5 million simply displaces the local contributions so that we pay for 100% of the program. And there's, like I say, $7 to $8 million of stimulus money coming down exactly for these purposes.
Senator Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, very few times I can stand and hope to correct the good Appropriations Committee Chairman on a subject matter, but I think this might be one of them. If you look at the handout that was handed out, the local match stays the same at the 43.44%, so that's going to stay constant. So these dollars are operating dollars. They're not capital dollars. There is stimulus dollars coming in, but that is only for capital expenditures, not for operating expenditures. So there is that firewall there. And with the new buses coming in from the federal government things, I'm not sure whether they're going to have more routes, but I know that the routes aren't going to go down, and I know that these operating expenses are projected to go up. So from the perspective that the local match is going to stay the same, the entire budget will probably go up, and that's really a function of demand, not so much on how many dollars are there. As the good senator did say, this originally started out at $5 million, and I believe in that particular funding thing, it did have some capital requests in the original $5 million. The federal stimulus packages are going to take care of the capital requests. This is really to take care of the operating requests, and the local match is going to stay the same.
Senator Vice President Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I'm having a hard time understanding how this is simply just one-time funding for operational expenses. It seems to me, though, even though it may not be part of their standard budget, they're going to be back asking for more additional operating expenses. Am I wrong there?
Senator Landon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Vice President, that's a good question. Just like happened to all of our checking accounts over the last year, we got hammered by $4 gas. As the good senator from Goshen County pointed out, I think what this is going to do a one-time fix, catch these guys back up on some operational money because these budgets got hammered with the price of fuel. There's a lot of deferred maintenance where they weren't able to get in there and maintain their fleets like they need to be maintained. They're carrying some pretty important cargo, so I think this is a one-time deal. I think they'll come back in next year through the Department of Transportation budgeting process and move on from there. But this is a one-time fix. As I said, they haven't been back to the Senate for any additional anything for 6 or 8 years, and that funding stream has been maintained at a pretty flat level. So I think all the way across the board, all 23 counties, I think it's going to be a much-needed little transfusion that we can help these guys out.
Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I urge your support to request. It's, frankly, one of the reasons it's here is because it's been successful. I mean, it's helped. We've spent a lot of time talking about all this legislation to keep the seniors in their homes and do all of those kind of things. This, folks, allows that. The program has been successful. They've got to have the money to keep it running, right? And I haven't always been supportive of the program. You know, in our county, for a long time, I accused them. They had good ridership, but I accused them of hauling midgets because I never saw anybody in the buses. That's not a correct political term. Excuse me, vertically challenged people. But it isn't. The ridership has picked up. It's keeping people off the road. And most of all, and my concerns is, it's providing valuable services to our seniors and providing valuable services to those who are homebound and can't get around to do things, and makes it so that we're actually, I think, in the long run, making their life in a position where we can save money by not having them all in nursing homes. And it is a bunch of money, but I think it's a bunch of money because it's been a successful program. Should come back under, I think, Department of Transportation next time. I agree with that. But so I urge you to support it at this time.
Senator Geis.
You've got to remember a couple, 3 years ago, we made these public transportation. Anybody can call up and ride these buses anymore, not just senior citizens like me and Senator Larson.
Any question being called on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Von Flader's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 1880, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The bill has passed. Majority floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and set again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed?
Messages from the House.
February the 26th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 417. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 60. National Guard Youth Challenge Program, ayes 46, noes 12, absent 2. February the 26th, 2009, message number 421, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 42, Burial Arrangements, ayes 54, noes 5, absent 1. Concurrence passed. House Bill number 104, Special District Election, Polling Place Requirement, ayes 59, absent 1. House Bill number 156, Energy Performance Contracting 2, ayes 58, noes 1, conflict 1. House Bill number 289, Child Protection Hearings, ayes 59, noes 1. House Bill 297, Simple Assault, ayes 60. February the 26th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 418. Concurrence requested, Mr. President, Senate File 72, Corporation Act Amendments. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 3, absent 2. February the 28th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 419, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 76, Snow Plows, Emergency Lights. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, absent 2. Message number 420, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 84, Aggravated Assault Choking. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 2, absent 1. Concurrence failed. February the 26th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 424, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill number 190, Driver's License Suspensions Child Support. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 4, noes 56. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number one to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Message number 425, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill number 288, Certificate of Authority, High Voltage Transmission Lines. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 450, noes 56. The House requests the Senate appointing conference committee number one to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 26th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 429. Conferees appointed joint conference committee number one. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number one from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 190. The House conferees are Representative Throne, Chairman, Representative Bonner and Gingery. February the 26th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 428, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 125, State Employee Compensation. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Signing enrolled acts. We are at that order of business, signing enrolled act. Senate Enrolled Act number 41.
Senate Enrolled Act number 41, being original Senate File 9.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 41, being original Senate File 9. That's so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 42.
Senate Enrolled Act number 42, being original Senate File 23.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 42, being original Senate File number 23. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 43.
Senate Enrolled Act number 43, being original Senate File 115.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 43, being original Senate File number 115. That's so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 44.
Senate Enrolled Act number 44, being original Senate File 111.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 44, being original Senate File number 111. That's so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 45.
Senate Enrolled Act number 45, being original Senate File 117.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 14, number 45, being original Senate File 117. That's so signed. Senate Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1.
Senate Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1, being original Senate Joint Resolution number 5.
I'm about to sign Senate Joint Resolution number 1, being original Senate Joint Resolution number 5. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 50.
House Enrolled Act number 50, being original House Bill 8.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 50, being original House Bill number 8. I'm so signed. House Enrolled Act number 51.
House Enrolled Act number 51 being original House Bill 38.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 51 being original House Bill number 38. I'm so signed. House Enrolled Act number 52.
House Enrolled Act number 52 being original House Bill 60.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 52 being original House Bill number 60. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act number 53.
House Enrolled Act number 53 being original House Bill 72.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 53 being original House Bill number 72. So signed. House Enrolled Act number 54.
House Enrolled Act number 54 being original House Bill 76.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 54 being House Original Bill number 76. House Enrolled Act number 55.
House Enrolled Act number 55 being original House Bill 119.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 55 being House original House Bill number 119. Not so signed. House Enrolled Act number 56.
House Enrolled Act number 56 being original House Bill 138.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 56 being the original House Bill number 138. I'm so signed. House Enrolled Act number 57.
House Enrolled Act number 57 being original House Bill 164.
About to sign House Enrolled Act number 57 being original House number 164. I'm so signed. House Enrolled Act number 58.
House Enrolled Act number 58 being original House Bill 223.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 58 being original House Bill number 223. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act number 59.
House Enrolled Act number 59 being original House Bill 25.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 59 being original House Bill number 25. I'm so signed. House Enrolled Act number 60.
House Enrolled Act number 60 being original House Bill 62.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 60 being original House Bill number 62. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act number 61.
House Enrolled Act number 61 being original House Bill 198.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 61 being original House Bill number 198. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act number 62.
House Enrolled Act number 62 being original House Bill 207.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 62 being original House Bill number 207. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 63.
House Enrolled Act number 63 being original House Bill 41.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 63 being original House Bill number 41. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act number 64.
House Enrolled Act number 64 being original House Bill 71.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 64 being original House Bill number 71. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act number 65.
House Enrolled Act number 65 being original House Bill 91.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 65 being original House Bill number 91. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 66.
House Enrolled Act number 66 being original House Bill 92.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 66, being original House Bill number 92. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 67.
House Enrolled Act number 67, being original House Bill 225.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 67. Be an original House Bill number 225. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 68.
House Enrolled Act number 68 being original House Bill 252.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 68 being original House Bill 252. So signed. House Enrolled Act, House Joint Resolution number 1.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1 being original House Joint Resolution 2.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1 being original House Joint Resolution number 2. So signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand at recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon. 2 p.m.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting actually immediately up at S14. We've got little food. We're eating up there in the room. And we will be interviewing nominees by the governor for the following positions: Aaron Clark and Michael Healy for the position on for positions on Game and Fish Commission, Peggy Colson for the position with the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust account, and Mary Hawkins for the position on the Parks and Cultural Resources Commission. In addition, Mr. President, the Joint Travel, Recreation, Wildlife Committee and Cultural Resources Committee will be meeting tomorrow morning at 8:30 down at H63, where we'll be getting a presentation from Game and Fish, and anybody's invited to this. And the first and probably most interesting and important one will be a presentation on invasive aquatic species. Apparently, they're causing quite a bit of problems, and they're about to hit us. Plus, a presentation on the latest wolf and elk research and on sagebrush mapping. That's 8:63 right off the parking garage.
Senator Nicholas.
The conference committee for the budget will probably begin conferencing about 3 o'clock, so I'd like to get the members together about a quarter till 2
just before we go back into session to think about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Conference Committee on Senate File 103, Child Abuse and Neglect Amendments, will meet in the House Judiciary upon adjournment. We were then going to take up thereafter the Conference Committee on Senate File 61, Sex Offender Registration. That may or may not occur due to some signing of some bills with the governor in the rotunda at one.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. for purpose of approving, confirming governor's appointments. We will first hear from Al Menear, Commissioner for the Wyoming Public Service Commission, and then Dixie C. and George Bo Short, Jr., who have been proposed for the Real Estate Commission. That's tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, S-19, the regular committee room. Thank you, Mr.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Revenue Committee number 3 will meet at 12:30 up in S-16 to take up House Bill 186, Engrossed Gasoline Tax, Agriculture Exemption 2, House Bill 230, Engrossed Vehicle Sales and Use Tax 2, and House Bill 50, Tax Sales Costs, as well as formulate the final list for interim study.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow morning at 8:30 in room 302, the video room, to conduct hearings on the governor's nomination of Sandy Shrupdyne for Industrial Siting Council, Tom Waterhouse, State Mining Council, Bern Hinckley, Enhanced Oil Recovery, Fred Ogden, Environmental Quality Council, Christopher Mullen, Geological Survey Board, Catherine Grzeszewski, Environmental Quality Council, and Maha Mahsinam, Energy, University of Wyoming Energy Resources Council. And further, Mr. President, on Friday, upon noon adjournment, we will be meeting with a light committee from the House to discuss interim topics in H-18 across the hall.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your Select Water Committee will meet upon adjournment tonight to handle a few amendments for the water people.
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. President, I forgot to mention that the students and staff that you met earlier from the Wyoming Educational Access Day participants will be having lunch at the Hersler Building, and they invite you to stop by and visit with them, and I assume that there's some snacks there. Thank you.
Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a reminder, tomorrow is the final day for bills to be on Committee of the Whole. Get a lot of questions. I said right now is the time when we're putting 100 pounds of flour in a 10-pound bag in terms of time. But I will tell you that I'm determined that we will finish those bills on the board today and maybe others. But for the benefit of staff, for those of us in the body, all of our punishment is self-inflicted. But for those of you on staff, you can probably plan on a pretty late adjournment.
You've heard the motion that the Senate stand recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is recessed.